Hey everybody, John Greenwald here with theblackvault.com. There's some breaking UFO related news if you're interested in that kind of thing. I thought I'd use that as an excuse to make a quick video for you guys. I always say quick and then it ends up to be like 9 hours long. So sorry about that. But what happened today, if you haven't seen it, if you're not following the Black Vault on social media, make sure you are so you get updated pretty much as this stuff happens. So you may have seen a post about this, but the Department of Defense has announced a new UAP-related office, but it seems like the effort has expanded a bit. So I wanted to bring you that news release and show you the official, we call them establishment memorandums, that will essentially create this office. So let me go ahead and pull up my screen here. This is the page. If you haven't seen it on theblackvault.com, go ahead and log in now. As of the day of recording this video anyway, you'll probably find it as one of the top stories as time goes on. It gets buried pretty quick because lots of stuff is happening. Lots of stuff is getting posted, so things fall to the bottom. I'll also link it in the show notes below. If you're watching on YouTube, you can just direct click on that. Or if you're on that audio podcast version, just know I'll have it in the show notes version as well, on whatever podcast platform you are listening to. So here is the highlight of it. And I think I'm going to go through kind of the whole thing. That way, especially for the audio version, you guys can get an idea of what was released today and what every single detail is, because this is kind of not only breaking, but evolving. I would bet money that the DOD doesn't really even know what they're doing here. Before I go into this, for those who will recall, they had the AOI MSG office. That was what came after the UAP task force. So in my point of view, and again, not that it means much, but it just seems like it's evolving, where the task force was more of a informal effort that morphed into that more formal AOI MSG, which was pronounced AIMSOG at the UAP hearing. If you didn't see that hearing, I do have a video here on the Black Vault's YouTube channel. You can watch the whole thing. Even made a podcast version for you all as well, so you can listen to it. And it's worth listening to, but that was the effort that was born out of the UAP task force. Now it seems like that has morphed into something else. I say morphed because the effort has expanded. Moultrie during the UAP hearing had mentioned that the AIMSOG would likely be renamed. In my opinion, this is a new effort and it has morphed into something else. So that's the quick preface to leading us now to today, July 20th, 2022, when they, meaning the Department of Defense, announced the establishment of what they call an all-domain anomaly resolution office. Now, what I did on the Black Vault is archive the official press release. I do this for a couple different reasons, and I've got way too many examples to show. A lot of times things get posted, and then they get unposted. They disappear. Now, I'm not going to say that that happened with this, but sometimes documents disappear. Sometimes the government changes their website. Sometimes in that process, documents go away. Press releases go away. One prime example: in the recent OSAP documents posted by the DIA, I had archived them all on the Black Vault. The DIA had taken them all down. They reorganized it, and weeks, and I think it was more than a month later, put everything back, but they actually did not put one document back. I have not been able to get an answer why. But anyway, some of you have asked me, you know, why do I just go to the trouble to archive all of this when sometimes it may be easier just to offer a direct link? That's the prime example why. So let's go through the press release. On July 15th, 2022, so that's 5 days ago, Deputy Secretary of Defense Kathleen Hicks, in coordination with the Director of National Intelligence, amended her original direction to the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security by renaming and expanding the scope of the Airborne Object Identification and Management Group. That's the AOI MSG or AIMSOG that I was just talking about, to the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, or AARO. I'm going with ARO. It's the government, so they'll probably have some weird pronunciation of it, but I'm just going to go with ARO for now, AARO. So all domain anomaly resolution office, due to the enactment of the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal 2022, which included a provision to establish an office in coordination with DNI with responsibilities that were broader than those originally assigned to the AMSOG. Today, USDINS Ronald S. Moultrie informed the Department of the establishment of AERO within the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security, and named Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, most recently the chief scientist at the Defense Intelligence Agency's Missile and Space Intelligence Center, as the director of AERO. The mission of the AERO will be to synchronize efforts across the Department of Defense and with other U.S. federal departments and agencies to detect, identify, and attribute objects of interest in, on, or near military installations, operating areas, training areas, special use airspace, and other areas of interest, and, as necessary, to mitigate any associated threats to safety of operations and national security. This includes anomalous, unidentified space, airborne, submerged, and transmedium objects. I'm gonna stop there for a minute. That to me is the biggest part of this. Now keep in mind, this has always been the unidentified aerial phenomena, let's say task force, or the effort to research UAP. And in recent weeks and months, they started talking about this underwater phenomena. Now in the UFO field, that's nothing new. I was working on a documentary probably 20 years ago for the History Channel, both on screen and on screen for that particular one. And we were talking about underwater objects, USOs, unidentified submersible objects or submerged objects, whoever you were, you know, speaking to. They had differing acronyms, but those weren't official. Those were not Department of Defense acronyms. Those were more, we'll call them ufological acronyms. So that is nothing new. What's new is the Department of Defense started talking about it. And then all of a sudden it started showing up in congressional language. And then all of a sudden, here you go, we're talking about submerged and transmedium objects, those in both going from sea to air, in Department of Defense language in this press release. That to me is big, but for me what's bigger is the unidentified space. Now, I'm guessing that this may be potentially like where they're going to use this as an excuse when mainstream media hopefully starts asking questions, that they'll talk about foreign adversaries using craft like we are experimenting and using now. And we know that we have unmanned spacecraft up there that's sometimes up there for 2+ years at a time, generally with classified missions. So I believe they're going to utilize what we as America are doing to ensure that these objects that are seen in space are not, let's say, China. I know Russia usually goes along with that, but with the situation in Ukraine, everybody's laughing at this point that it can't be them because they're just failing miserably and they don't have the tech. And that could very well be true. But regardless, though, either now or in the future, that potentially is a defense concern. In addition to the portion of these phenomena that we just can't explain. So going back to this language, the fact that they have now broadened this effort to include unidentified space, airborne, submerged, and transmedium objects, that's huge, because that tells me that they're hearing more than what the general public is hearing. We're hearing about those military encounters. Sure, the Tic Tac arguably transmedium with, you know, splashes in the water. Maybe it came out of the water. It doesn't really matter. We haven't really focused on that in the stories in the general public realm. So we're more hearing about the unidentified aerial part, the airborne part that they're talking about. Now, all of a sudden, the language with space, transmedium, and submerged is becoming more prevalent. So those classified briefings got a little bit more interesting to me because, this is a guess, but that's probably where they're hearing about stuff like this. And I'm not going to do it in this video, but today, same day, the House Intelligence Committee approved their Intelligence Authorization Act. So In there is also language that kind of echoes this with submerged objects, underwater phenomena, stuff like that. So you're seeing this language more and more. And that's where I think that these classified briefings are potentially going much more into those angles that the general public just is not hearing about, which, if you ask me, is pretty darn cool. Going back to the press release, the Aero Executive, I always laugh at these acronyms, the Aero Executive Council, or Aero Exec, remember AIMSOG had kind of the same thing, led by Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security, Ronald Moultrie, will provide oversight and direction to the Aero along these primary lines of effort. Surveillance, collection, and reporting. Number two, system, capabilities, and design. Number three, intelligence, operations, and analysis. Number four, mitigation and defeat. Number five, governance. Number six, science and technology. So that's the press release. Excuse me. That's what they sent out today. And these are the establishment memos. Now, here's the one that was created 15 July 2022. This was by Kathleen Hicks, who we just read about in the press release, but also you recall from the past, she was the one that did the memorandum establishing AIMSOG. And you'll see here subject matter establishment of the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. Let me read this for you. On November 23, 2021, I directed the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security to establish the Airborne Object Identification Management Synchronization Group to synchronize efforts across the Department of Defense with other federal departments and agencies to detect, identify, and attribute or attribute objects of interest in special use airspace. I know people use both pronunciations. Sorry if I'm wrong on it. I also established the Airborne Object Identification Management Executive Council to provide oversight and direction to the AIMSOG. Prior to the establishment of the AIMSOG, the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2022 was enacted with a provision that requires the Secretary of Defense to establish an office in coordination with the Director of National Intelligence with responsibilities that include those that were to be assigned to the AIMSOG. Therefore, following coordination with the DNI, I hereby approve the following amendments to my original direction in Deputy Secretary of Defense Memorandum, Establishment of the Airborne Object Identification and Management Group, November 23, 2021, to meet the DoD requirements in Section 1683 of the NDAA for fiscal year 2022. The All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, or AARO, will be established to carry out the duties that were to be fulfilled by the AIMSOG. The mission of the AARO will be to synchronize efforts across the department with other federal departments and agencies to detect, identify, and attribute objects of interest in, on, or near military installations, operating areas, training areas, special use airspace, and other areas of interest, and as necessary, to mitigate any associated threats of safety of operations and national security. This includes anomalous unidentified space, airborne, submerged, and transmedium objects. The AOIM exec is renamed to Aero Executive Council. The mission of the Aero exec will be to provide oversight and direction to the Aero. I direct the USDINS to establish the Aero in coordination with the Director of Administration and Management, consistent with Section 1683 of the NDAA for fiscal year 2022. I also direct the Secretary of the Navy to disestablish the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force no later than the date the AARO is established, and to support the orderly transition of the UAPTF, including the transfer of any data, analysis, or other relevant material to the AARO. I'll be honest with you, I thought the UAPTF was already disestablished. But who knows? Who am I? Apparently, we're disestablishing it again. But I thought AIMSOG did that when that came about, but who knows? A quick note before I finish off this memo. This is a little bit for the FOIA people out there. That last paragraph tells me one thing. There is going to be an amazing paper trail that's going to go from the office of the UAPTF, or the disestablished UAP task force, to the new AARO. All of that data to be migrated is going to probably likely be, you know, either one dump of data or hopefully one dump, but potentially more than one. But regardless, it is a data flow that is trackable in a legal sense. So now I have an established language that that transfer is going to take place, and you can cite all that communication between the now disestablished UAPTF and Arrow. And you better believe I'm going for all of that. The problem is that you can't file right now. The reason is because it hasn't happened yet. And that's the trick with the FOIA. One quick note on that, and then I'll move on, because again, I always like to try and help with FOIA things wherever I can and offer some 2 cents. Generally, most agencies, let's say it's July 20th right now, if something's going to happen next week, if you file a request for it now, even though it's processed after next week, technically the cutoff date for records is July 20th. Some agencies will do once the request starts being processed, and then you might get lucky. Some agencies do that. I've seen it all across the board. But I believe the raw law language says that the cutoff date is the date of the request. And so let's say you're going after emails in a FOIA. What's tough is it may take them months to review them. But some gold happens between July 20th, 2022, and the months later. You won't get the gold. So a lot of times you'll have to refile. So you wait for that case to come in. They'll release all the information to you. And a lot of times I find myself refiling again. And you know that upsets them because they just went through months of reviewing the same stuff or something similar. But then I file the same request, but I add the language, give me everything created after the information process for FOIA case XYZ. And then it starts anew. So you always have to be careful and strategize when you're actually going to file. So hopefully that adds a little bit of information for you. But that's what makes this tricky, because we know that it's going to happen. We know there's amazing information going. And yeah, I've got open FOIAs for some of that UAP task force data. But at least now we've established a data flow from one office to another that could potentially be overlooked in, let's say, an older FOIA case. But now if they have a mandate that everything, all data and analyses and so on, are going over, that's gold. Talk about gold. That's gold. All right. To finish off that memo from 5 days ago, the Arrow will serve as the authoritative office of the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena or UAP-related activities for the Department of Defense. The Arrow is the DoD focal point for all UAP and UAP-related activities and may represent the department for such activities to the interagency, Congress, media, and public in coordination with the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Legislative Affairs and Assistant to the Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs. Any DoD component acting on behalf of the UAP Task Force or who has data analysis contracts or other material related to UAP will immediately synchronize their efforts with the Arrow. And you better believe all of that creates paper trails as well. And what I just kind of went over will apply as well. Director of National Intelligence was CC'd on that memorandum from the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Kathleen Hicks. And 5 days later, that brings us to today. This is the establishment memorandum by Ronald Moultrie. Subject: establishment, resourcing, and leadership of the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. You can see it's a memo for all the senior Pentagon leadership, commanders of the combatant commands, defense agency and field activity directors. These are Kathleen Hicks memos from 5 days ago, and then the November one, which we already talked about. And here's what Moultrie had to say. Pursuant to references A and B, I established the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office within the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security. The Arrow will synchronize efforts across the department and with other U.S. federal departments and agencies to detect, identify, and attribute objects of interest in, on, or near military installations, operating areas, training areas, special use airspace, and other areas of interest, and, as necessary, to mitigate any associated threats to safety of operations and national security. This includes anomalous, unidentified space, airborne, submerged, and transmedium objects. I know some of this language is kind of repeated, but I think it's important to go over again. The Arrow will leverage Department of Defense capabilities and synchronize with the intelligence community to tackle the unique challenges posed by the presence of anomalous objects across all domains. I will manage the process to enable the Aero Executive Council to provide oversight and directions and direction to the Aero along the following primary lines of effort. 1. Surveillance, collection, and reporting. 2. System capabilities and design. 3. Intelligence operations and analysis. 4. Mitigation and defeat. 5. Governance. 6. Science and technology. My office will provide necessary administrative support to the Aero, including facilities, management, budget, contracting, human resources, security, congressional affairs, and information technology. You know what I'm going to say about that line, right? Paper trails on each and every one of those line items. My office will also advocate for resources to support the operation of the Aero and the execution of the Aero mission across the future years' defense plan. During the transition from the Navy UAP Task Force to the Aero, I expect the DoD components to continue to meet their responsibilities for timely reporting of UAP, as they have done to this point. We will provide additional implementation guidance as we move forward. Guidance, also paper trail. With the Aero establishment, and we look forward to working with the DoD to streamline reporting processes and procedures. It is vital to our national security and the safety of our military personnel that we maintain awareness of anomalous objects in all domains. We must also keep pace with the development and employment of novel technology by our adversaries. In doing so, we are committed to providing maximum transparency, yeah, right, while safeguarding classified information and controlled unclassified information. The establishment of the Aero is a significant step forward in developing the capabilities and processes that are necessary to achieve these goals. Ronald S. Moultrie. And that is the end of his memo sent today. Now, going back to the press release, you will recall that they put Dr. Sean M. Kirkpatrick as the chief of the new Aero office. They call him Dr. K to his staff and team. Let me read some of his bio because it is impressive. He brings over 2 decades of experience and a significant depth of expertise in scientific and technical intelligence and space policy, research and development, acquisitions and operations, specializing in space counterspace mission areas. Dr. Kirkpatrick was born in Columbus, Georgia, to an Army family. Grew up in Atlanta, where he attended the University of Georgia as an undergrad to study physics. Dr. Kirkpatrick finished his PhD work in non-linear and non-equilibrium phonon dynamics of rare earth doped fluoride crystals, also at the University of Georgia, and is currently an adjunct professor at UGA. Dr. Kirkpatrick began his career in defense intelligence-related science and technology immediately out of grad school. After receiving his PhD in physics in 1995, he subsequently took a postdoctoral position at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, investigating laser-induced molecular vibrations of high explosives under an AFOSR program. That's the Air Force Office of Scientific Research. And sorry for my pronunciation on some of this if it's wrong. In 1996, he was offered a National Research Council Fellowship at the U.S. Naval Research Lab in Washington, D.C., investigating novel solid-state lasers for the Department of the Navy. In 1997, he was recruited by the Air Force Research Lab to build an ultra-fast laser physics lab to investigate nonlinear optics, novel ultra-fast spectroscopic methods, and nonlinear micro-nano fabrication techniques for the Air Force. Good God, that those are mouthfuls. In 2003, he was offered a program manager position in the National Reconnaissance Office and converted to CIA in 2005. In 2007, he was assigned as Chief Technology Officer in a joint CIA-DIA program office, where he later became Division Chief as a DIA officer. In 2010, he was asked to serve as the Space Control Portfolio Manager for the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, Space and Intelligence Office of the Secretary of Defense. In 2012, he returned to DIA and served as the Defense Intelligence Officer for Scientific and Technical Intelligence, serving as the Department of Defense's counterpart to the National Intelligence Manager for Science and Technology until 2016. Towards the end of his tenure, Dr. Kirkpatrick served on special assignment to the Principal Deputy Director of National Intelligence, leading the intelligence community support to the Joint Interagency Combined Space Operations Center. And the reason why I'm reading all this to you is it really is amazing when you look at the background of those that are involved in these research efforts. I mean, they truly are remarkable resumes. I know sometimes just by default, people that are involved in these efforts just get hated, you know, again, by default, just simply because they're part of it. They're part of the cover up. But when you really look at their backgrounds, I mean, it's just insanity how much education, experience, how much they kind of flow in and out of these intelligence agencies over the years. It truly is just amazing to really think about. Let's finish it up. From 2016 to his current assignment, Dr. Kirkpatrick served in a variety of no-fail roles, including Deputy Director of Intelligence, U.S. Strategic Command, Director of National Security Strategy, National Security Council, Deputy Director of Intelligence, and the DNI Representative for Space Command. The Space Command Intelligence Enterprise was the fifth organization he has been the intelligence community lead for establishment. His most recent assignment was as Chief Scientist at DIA's Missile and Space Defense, DIA's Missile and Space Intelligence Center. Dr. Kirkpatrick is the recipient of several scientific and intelligence awards. These include the National Intelligence Exceptional Achievement Medal, four National Intelligence Collaboration Medallions, the NRO Innovation and Achievement Award, the Cleary Award for Scientific Excellence, and the DIA Director's Award for Excellence. Dr. Kirkpatrick holds two open patents and has contributed to several scientific books on non-linear phenomena, as well as written multiple strategies for the national and defense intelligence communities. He was appointed to the senior service in 2012. It's one heck of a resume. And again, not to beat the dead horse, usually those types of backgrounds really kind of shed some light on why they're there, for obvious reasons. Like, they don't just throw somebody in there to lead the effort. I always go back to the Project Blue Book days where you just kind of had military brass leading the effort. Now, of course, they brought in scientific minds like Dr. J. Allen Hynek, but these programs were led by, you know, the military senior leadership, military brass, and those things were a nightmare. How is this going to translate and compare to something like Project Blue Book or the task force? And the answer to that is, I don't know. I don't think really anybody knows. My big question is, we know what the UAP task force did to a point. We know that they studied X amount of cases. It was 144 for the report that they did. It ballooned to about 400 or so by the UAP hearing. So we know they did hundreds of cases. We know that they analyzed them, could not identify the majority of them. During the UAP hearing, Scott Bray from the U.S. Navy decided to say, well, we solved this one, the green triangle, the pyramid UFOs that will be debated, I'm sure, until I die. I stay out of that debate. I mean, to me, it's pretty convincing that it is a artifact of the camera that turned everything triangular. It seems like other people are coming around to that, but it doesn't mean that it's drones. So that argument is still going on. Let's let them just duke it out. But that being said, you know, there are these kind of small glimpses into what the task force was doing. Now, fast forward to AIMSOG, when, again, maybe I dreamt it, but I thought that had disbanded last November, last year, the UAP task force, and things were transitioning to that office, and it was kind of slow going. I did, when I tried to get quotes from the Pentagon, did essentially get kind of that verbiage where it was essentially just slow going. That was, I forget, I'm paraphrasing a little bit. I don't remember the exact quote, but regardless, it was just a slow process, and they were admitting to that. But from last year to now, almost essentially 8-9 months go by, and literally nothing has happened. And that's what my big question mark is, did AIMSOG do anything? Like, was there anything established? Reports? Were there investigations? Or was it still just the task force? Nothing got off the ground. And then now these memorandums that we just went over are now mandating that all the information from the task force get transferred over to Aero, and AIMSOG just maybe was a shell of nothing. Maybe that's what that was. So that's a very much an unanswered question. And then going back to the root of what I was talking about on whether or not that this is going to be any different than Blue Book, I really hope so. The question mark, though, moving forward, is what are they going to make public? Now, to my surprise, there were, is it a glimmer of hope? I'm not really sure. It's a Twitter account for this Aero office that's already established and that already tweeted today and essentially trying to reach out to the general public, like, hey, we're here and going to share information where possible. Is that a glimmer of hope? Is it a smokescreen? I'm not really sure. Time will tell. But going back to my comments when I kind of insert some of the FOIA hints and tips and 2 cents, if it's even worth that. When I do that, the reason is because for me, the most interesting information is not going to come from the promise of a public report. Even if we get the public report, it's not going to be the most interesting. I'll give you a prime example, that public UAP report that everybody kind of calls a letdown from last year. That obviously was something that we all wanted and that was mandated for the public. We got something that was bare bones. There were some interesting aspects to it, but it was a letdown to many people. Now, fast forward to my fight with DNI to get the classified version released. And when you look at that, even though a lot of it was redacted, it gave a glimpse into how much more there is going on behind the scenes, like potentially either photos or diagrams of the shapes of UAP, of what they're seeing. So they're seeing common traits with these cases. Sometimes we can assume those things, but now we literally have it in black and white, more black, sadly, than white, as it's all redacted. But regardless, that behind the scenes generally offers a much better picture of what's going on. And those paper trails are why I point that out, because the communication behind those 14 different agencies that contributed that report and the UAP task force, that communication, I guarantee, will have more information and more interesting information than what ended up in the report. We know that report was way watered down. So what were the contributions of, let's say, the NRO or NASA or whatever it may be? And we don't know yet. But last year when that report came out, I had mentioned in past videos, I did more than 50 requests based on that. And a lot of those were based on trying to get the communications and the data that was shared between those agencies that were consulted and the task force that went into that report, because that is where that gold is, not the general public report. So going back to Aero, they could promise these types of reports. But if you ask me, it's the behind the scenes, the paper trails, what I'm pointing out to you guys, those little things that you got to pick up. Who are they going to be talking to? Boom, that's a paper trail. Asking for information, mandating the transfer of data, boom, that's a paper trail. And so you go after each and every one of those things. And yeah, it is like a tree branch. I've used that analogy a lot. You have your trunk and it just branches off into 3,000 different requests. But that is the power of the FOIA, albeit it gets a bad rap many times. It allows you to get access to some of those things and you could be pleasantly surprised. I'll be dropping some videos about NASA documents that have shed a lot of light on the UAP task force, even though NASA's contribution was very, very small and minimal. It still actually shed a lot of light on the task force, and you pick up these little gems and information like that. That wasn't in a public report, but rather the internal communications internally at NASA, but also between NASA and other intelligence agencies. Pretty cool stuff, so be prepared for those videos. Thank you so much. I told you it was gonna be a quick video, what, about a half hour or so, who knows. I'll try and edit it maybe a little bit before I post it, but appreciate you guys sticking with me. If you're on YouTube, please consider hitting the thumbs up button and also making sure you're subscribed, and the biggest help of all is spreading the word. I know I say that every video, but it really does help. The channel has experienced some great growth. I know I gotta do more videos, and that's always my intent, but helping in that respect would be awesome. And of course, if you guys feel so inclined, I do have a Patreon link or other ways you can support. 100% goes right back into this channel, buying the documents. You'll see from that NASA video, the bill on that one was close to $400 just on that. I show the receipts as well. So anybody who contributes, you'll see where that money goes to. And I kind of try and offer that up so you know I'm not just making a car payment or something silly. So that said, that link is there as well. If you're listening on the podcast version, thank you for doing so. Please consider offering a review on whatever platform you are listening to. I aim for 5 stars. I won't tell you what to do, but that's what I aim for. Thank you guys for listening and watching. This is John Greenwald Jr. signing off, and we'll see you next time.